Detroit, Michigan is just across the river from Windsor, Ontario, in Canada. Detroiters cross the river to work, to gamble at the big casino in Windsor, and to shop for bargains because the Canadian dollar is so low. 12 million cars and trucks drive across the Ambassador Bridge every year.
That crossing has historical significance as well. Thousands of escaped slaves followed the Underground Railroad through Detroit and on into Ontario. Commentator Desiree Cooper lives in Detroit, and she went looking for the descendants of slaves who now live on both sides of the river.
In the days following the September terrorist attack, the traffic flow across the border went from a gush to a trickle. It could take up to 8 hours to clear the border patrol. During one October trip with my family, we were stopped at the border and our car was the subject of a one-hour search, including the kids' book bags and their coat pockets. Now the congestion has eased and the traffic is almost back to normal. But I will never approach the border again without my heart galloping. Will I be able to get across?
Where are we coming from today?
We're looking at Underground Railroad's historical sites.
Crossing the border makes Barbara Hughes Smith pause too. But for her, the span between Michigan and Ontario traverses a terror of another kind. She's one of the many African Americans in Detroit with Canadian family, descendants of the refugees who fled the horrors of the American slave trade to find freedom in towns like Buxton, Ontario.
As a child, I was never taken to see my relatives. I would hear stories about how George Hatter had escaped from West Virginia, Bluefield specifically, to the Raleigh Township area in Canada. But it was like fictional. It was almost like a fairy tale, and it didn't seem real to me. Years later, I met a relative, and she was talking about Buxton, and she started talking about her relatives and what it looked like, and was like, oh, it really does exist. So she gave me the directions. So I actually drove up one day, and it was so, I mean, it was just like a new life for me, because I was able to see from where I came, and it was like a whole world that I had been missing.
That whole world opened not just for Barbara, but for the 40,000 former slaves who crossed the border in the 30 years between the end of slavery in Great Britain in 1843 and the end of the Civil War. Andrea Moore is one of Barbara's distant cousins, the branch of the family that remained in Canada even after emancipation. As a historian, she has studied the Underground Railroad and the final crossing of the Detroit River.
Many people came by way of smaller boats, canoes. In the wintertime, people crossed because the river froze over completely. Many people crossed by foot, and people crossed by way of ferry. For instance, Thomas Shilver was the captain of the Gem. And in fact, the Windsor Herald reported that he brought over 800 people in 1 week.
Once they crossed, many settled in Amherstburg and established the most important symbol of their newfound freedom, a church. The First Baptist Church of Amherstburg still stands today, a tiny white frame building surrounded by a quiet, working-class neighborhood. According to church records, the congregation began in 1836 as former slaves met in each other's homes. Even in the Promised Land, they were prohibited from worshiping with whites. Their church is still home to the same three or four clans who built it over 160 years ago. Their minister is Reverend Dale Simmons, a boyish-looking 41-year-old. Now the keeper of the church history, he showed me into the sanctuary.
When I look up at it, I think of a bottom of a boat. We're in a boat upside down.
The roof does look like the hull of an ark, with its varnished cedar planking. It's easy to imagine a tiny congregation sitting in the oak pews, or walking in white robes the few blocks to the Detroit River for baptisms. Sometimes, said Simmons, the former slaves had to chop a hole in the ice so that the ceremonies could be performed. The congregation's first minister was Reverend Anthony Binga, Barbara Hugh Smith's great-great-great-grandfather. Binga dedicated himself to missionary work. Reverend Simmons said Binga traveled by foot through the heavily forested miles between Amherstburg and Toronto, turning more souls to God.
I think his mission was to keep people founded and rooted in Jesus Christ. Look what God has done for you, how They know the dangers that they went through escaping slavery, have to come across that river. And so for to keep them in mind that it was God who brought them across and kept them safe through that, and they weren't in harm. And then once they got over here, you know, they had to have somewhere established. So this was a place for blacks to be all in one spot.
As the refugees continued to cross the river, they blended quietly into Canada's border towns, dispersed into the woods, or formed towns of their own. When the Civil War broke out, many African Canadians went back across the river to fight with the Union Army. Those who stayed behind formed border militias in case the Confederacy won and they had to defend the Canadian border. But when the Union won the Civil War in 1865, countless African Canadians returned to the American South, abandoning their Canadian villages, homes, and churches. Some who left were even Canadian-born, including Elijah McCoy, the famous inventor and holder of 58 U.S. patents. In the decades following emancipation, the history of African Americans and African Canadians evolved as the history of two separate people. While the story of African Americans continued to be one of a violent struggle for equality, the relatively small number of African Canadians moved toward assimilation. Reverend Simmons was a child when the riots broke out in Detroit in 1967.
That was just phenomenal to think that that was going on so close to us and people were killing one another over race. I remember our pastor at the time was from Detroit, and he would come over and preach on Sunday morning and he'd talk about it a little bit and say, well, they had to go home before it got dark. And then when they got home, they'd be in the house and they'd have to shut all their lights off because there was bullets flying all the time. I pictured my pastor going home to a war zone. And you're saying, my, how can that ever be? What is wrong with people? We didn't understand that. We didn't have that over here.
There was once a time when all Africans on this continent could have been called African Americans, a term that encompasses not only their roots in this hemisphere, but the pervasive influence of slavery upon their lives. But I wonder if our experiences as citizens of different nations is forcing us to relinquish our joint roots. Barbara Hugh Smith worries that the future generations will not remember that all former slaves were unified in their quest for freedom before they became Americans or Canadians. She does her part to remember. She crosses the border each Labor Day to attend an international family reunion in Buxton. It's there that African Americans and African Canadians watch parades, eat ice cream, tell family stories, and vow never to let their history become as difficult to traverse as the many obstacles to freedom.
Desiree Cooper is a columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Mm-hmm.